Hi, and welcome to our Pensions Age podcast. I'm Laura Blows, editor of Pensions Age, and joining me today is State Street Global Advisors Global Co-Head of Asset Stewardship, Robert Walker, who is here to discuss the stewardship responsibilities of investors. So, hi, Rob, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Laura, pleasure to be here.
So, Rob, with the increased focus in ESG matters over the past year or so, particularly that of climate change, has there also been an increased awareness by pension funds of the stewardship power and responsibility that they hold as investors?
Definitely, yes. In the last few years, we've seen pension funds becoming much more proactive in terms of engaging in stewardship activity, and more importantly, reviewing with their asset managers how they're conducting effective stewardship. And we've certainly seen in our discussions with our clients more focus on the outcomes of our engagement activity, why we've prioritised specific themes and sectors as part of our stewardship programme. And we've also seen increased regulation, of course, driving some of these requirements. So, for example, in the UK, significant vote disclosure, as well as engagements across client-specific portfolios. And in 2022, it's going to be an incredibly busy year for us as we seek to engage other asset managers with our clients on things like expression of wish and split voting in pooled funds.
It's great to hear that trustees are being more proactive and working with managers such as yourself in what, as you say, will be a busy year. So for that, what will be SSGA's stewardship priorities for 22, would you say, and why?
Yeah, so we recently put out our 2022 CEO proxy letter where we set out our two key priorities for the year, which is climate change and diversity. And I'll just start with climate change. So since 2014, climate change has been central to our stewardship activities, given the growing evidence that climate change is a systemic risk to all investors. And of course, we recognise that since then, companies have come a long way in disclosing and managing the climate-related risk. And investors too, of course, have become more sophisticated in examining and addressing these risks within their portfolios and demanding more disclosure. The emergence of frameworks have also helped in this regard. So the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosure, or TCFD, has become the go-to standard for climate-related discussions with investors like ourselves, increasingly using this new information to tilt or even transform our portfolios for the future. At the macro level, of course, there remains more progress to be made, with increasing pressure from governments and regulators to cut emissions in half by the end of the decade. We do believe there's less and less time for companies to meet the required progress. And we're seeing more companies making net zero commitments, with over one-fifth of the world's 2,000 largest public companies committing to meet a specific net zero target. However, few companies have provided a clear roadmap to achieving these goals, and fewer asset managers have provided detail on what they expect these companies to disclose as they prepare for this historic transition. So, of course, while the path ahead may be relatively straightforward in terms of net zero for some companies, we do believe that in general, the transition will be very hard or non-linear for most. And so as a long-term investor, what are we asking companies to do in terms of their net zero transition? Well, what we're really asking companies to do is to be pragmatic and to have real clarity around how and why their particular transition plan will help the company make meaningful progress towards the destination. And we also believe it's essential that boards understand the company's pathway to net zero and how they will leverage their unique strengths and opportunities, which in turn, of course, will help investors like us to support companies on this journey. So how are we going to do this? Well, beginning with the 2022 proxy season, our focus will be to drive both broad climate action in the market as well as across sectors, with more targeted action for companies with the most significant emissions. We do expect companies across our major indices in the US, Canada, UK, Europe, and Australia to align with climate-related disclosures requested by the TCFD. And we're looking in particular for disclosure around board oversight of climate-related risk and opportunity, total direct and indirect greenhouse gas emissions, scope 1 and 2, and finally, clear targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. We do note that nearly one third of companies in the S&P 500 are still not providing these disclosures against TCFD, and we will take voting action against directors across our applicable indices should they not meet our disclosure expectations. In the coming year, we'll also launch a targeted engagement campaign with our most significant emitters across our portfolio to encourage disclosure aligned with our expectations for climate transition, but we also have to walk the talk. And we have to do our part to be held accountable for progress. Last April, we joined the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative to ensure our portfolios reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 or sooner, and set interim targets for 2030. So we're doing a lot in the climate space. I also mentioned that the second focus in 2022 was going to be diversity, particularly around advancing the transition towards more diverse boards and workforces. For nearly 5 years, our focus on diversity has embraced a number of dimensions, given our belief in cognitive diversity, or to put it another way, the diversity of thought. What we really mean here is that we believe a range of experiences are critical assets in the boardroom. We began in 2017 with our Fearless Girl campaign, which encouraged companies to add at least one woman director to their board. In the years that followed, we've expanded this policy to most major markets and indices. And the outcome of this has been immense. Today, 862 companies, or 58% of the 1,486 companies that we've identified as previously having all-male boards, have now added a woman director to the board. This past year, in fact, every company in the S&P 500 index had at least one woman on their board, which is fantastic progress. So while boards have become more gender diverse, it's clear that more work needs to be done. And as such, we're enhancing our existing gender diversity policy in the following way. In 2022, we will expect all of our holdings across the globe to have at least one woman on their board. Additionally, beginning in the 2023 proxy season, we will expect boards to be comprised of at least 30% women directors for companies within our major indices in the US, Canada, UK, Europe, and Australia. We expect this change to result in boards with 3 or 4 women directors on average, and as many as 3,000 to 4,000 additional female directors across our covered indices. Where companies are not meeting our expectations, we are prepared to vote against the chair of the board's nominating committee or the board leader. But we're also expanding our focus on diversity to include race and ethnicity. And we will take voting action against companies where, for example, in the S&P 500 and FTSE 100, they do not have a person of color on their board, or where companies in the S&P 500 and FTSE 100 do not disclose the racial and ethnic diversity of their boards. Or finally, where companies in the S&P 500 do not disclose their EEO1 report. Since 2020, the number of companies in the S&P 500 that disclose the racial and ethnic makeup of their boards has more than doubled. And whilst those in the S&P 100 are disclosing their EEO1 or employment survey reports, this is a report that's required by the Department of Justice and which discloses the racial and gender makeup of a company from the bottom to the top. So whilst this has tripled for S&P 100 companies in the last year, nearly 3 in 10 FTSE 100 companies have also added minority directors to their boards as well. We want to encourage boards to continue to have effective oversight of diversity and inclusion and diversity, but we want to go broadly more beyond the board as well. And we're doing this in a number of ways. So the first is through thought leadership. We recently partnered with Russell Reynolds and the Force Foundation to develop a playbook for effective board oversight of racial and ethnic diversity. We also see human capital management now widely recognized as both a risk and opportunity for employers in the wake of COVID, and we've published guidance for effective disclosure and practices. And finally, we continue to advance progress on racial and ethnic diversity through our 10 actions steps to address racism and inequality. And this topic will continue to be a key priority for us in the year ahead.
So, Rob, thank you for providing that overview of SSDA stewardship goals. But now, perhaps, could you explain the practical actions that you will be taking to help achieve these aims?
Yeah, so for the most part, it's going to be through engagement and voting. So if we take climate as an example, as I mentioned, we are planning to launch a targeted engagement campaign with our most significant emitters within our portfolios to encourage disclosure aligned with our expectations for climate transition. This will cover 10 areas, including decarbonisation strategy, capital allocation, climate governance, and climate policy. We'll also be publishing again our annual climate review, which would include our voting and engagement case studies and insights as well for the broader market.
Okay, thank you, Rob. And just as a final point, please could you explain the broad benefits of focusing on these areas of climate and diversity, and generally actually of active investor stewardship and engagement. So not just looking at the broad environmental and societal benefits, but also in terms of the benefits for investors themselves.
So fundamentally, we believe that addressing material ESG issues is good business practice and essential to a company's long-term financial performance. For us, it's a matter of value, not values. And in order to kind of begin addressing ESG in a more comprehensive way, in 2019, we launched our factor, which is our transparent scoring system that measures the performance of a company's business operations and governance as it relates to financially material and set specific ESG issues. And our factor is based on the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board's materiality framework, SASB. We've now seen that a growing number of companies and investors are using SASB to guide their ESG public reporting. And we think this is an important development because we want to see the development of a common framework to help guide companies in terms of their metrics and reporting conventions. So we now use our factor to help companies to understand how their ESG disclosure is aligned with best practice, as well as help our clients to understand their portfolio exposure, as well as inform our own asset stewardship engagement investment decisions. And we do believe that a company's ESG score will soon effectively be as important as its credit rating. In the 2020 proxy voting season, we did start to take voting action against board members at companies across our major indices that we considered to be laggards based on their R factor score, and where those companies had not disclosed to us a plan for improving their score or committed to engage with us to improve their score. So our factor has now become a really important way for us to gauge ESG materiality across our portfolio companies.
Okay, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Rob, for joining us, and thank you all for listening. Goodbye.